Friday, December 16th, the merry mood of Christmas, which began Monday with the newspaper women's party and continued with the Arts Council dinner and the party for the staff and the lighting of the Christmas tree Thursday, is dissipating under the onslaught of hostile articles. Yesterday was the announcement of Bill Moyers leaving. The Manchester book is dominating the newspapers. Ms. Kennedy is filing suit to block the book. And the Johnson's boorishness on the ride back from Dallas fills columns and headlines. Reston and the credibility gap, that coined phrase rapidly gaining credence, the critical Democratic governors filling the papers. Nevertheless, life goes on and so does work. With Bess and with Ashton finishing up the albums, the T.J. Taylors and the Steadmans and the Rathers. Some of the nicest visits that will ever take place at the White House. They were last summer. These albums are Christmas presents to remind them of those hilarious days at the White House with a house party of 13 adding the Davises, that makes 17. I had a light lunch in my room, autographed a living White House book for Jean-Louis, and then said Merry Christmas to him for the last time. How much I will miss him as he fixed me up for the children's party. It's always one of the happiest parties of the year. And if you're in the eye of the hurricane, no matter. So is this. The children began coming about 4 o'clock. 150 of them, from Friendship House and the Boys Club of Columbia Heights, St. Vincent's Home and School, St. Anne's Infant Home, the Washington Hearing Society, the YWCA Boys Club of Alexandria, and Barney Neighborhood House. All dressed up, very quiet and solemn, many of the little girls with white gloves on, hair ribbons, and very prim and well-mannered. I looked in on them from a distance before I came down to the East Room where they were finally all assembled, stiffly in chairs, ready to watch the puppet show. I came in and sat in the front row with a floor full of children cross-legged in front of me. One of them soon got up and sat on my lap. Linda, down the row from me, was being very helpful, was being clamored over by several. The puppet show was by the Chandler brothers, Mark and Chris, who held us in thrall for about 30 minutes with their magic little figures, a Spanish dancer, a very sad little boy, an innocent gaiety that's quite unique. And then I went to the microphone and asked them to all come in for cookies and ice cream into the state dining room, where the tables were children's size, and I sat at one with a little girl named Linda, surprisingly, on one side. And we ate ice cream that looked like Christmas trees and decorated cookies and drank punch. There were plenty of second helpings without asking. And there was Linda at one table, lots of teenage hostesses, daughters of government officials, members of the cabinet, Lisa Connor and Christy Carpenter, and Diana's little Lisa, who was very capably busy answering questions about where was the bathroom. The most important question at my table was, when is Santa Claus coming, at least after the second go-round of cookies? Santa Claus was Sandy Fox, much disguised with lots of pillows and a big white silky beard. After about the 16th question at my table, he finally appeared, and then the stampede began. He asked us to follow him into the blue room where the Christmas tree was, but it was more of a race than a following. Safely ensconced on one side of the room, Santa dispensed trains and trucks and dolls with clothes, and a joyous pandemonium ensued. Linda Bird was good. She settled quarrels, got toys for the quiet ones that didn't get any, and all the little hostesses were helpful. And at last, the floor was a wasteland of paper, and every child had one or more toys. And by 5:30, the party was over, and the hostesses, whom I had tried to speak to, chaperones from the various agencies of the United Givers Fund, gathered up their charges and went home. Dorothy McCardle wrote, "Thomas Jefferson and James Madison rocked in their frames. The Christmas tree in the blue room teetered. Santa Claus wiped his brow and staggered back. The children's invasion of the White House was over for another year." Still, it is one of the nicest parties that ever takes place here, and the third year has not dimmed its luster. A little later, I slipped down to the library to thank Santa Claus and all the assembled hostesses. It had been such a help. I was so proud of them. And then, back upstairs to wait for the departure for Texas. It was one of those times when you feel suspended in space. The things that you work with have been packed and departed. You need to do needlepoint or read a book. But Lyndon was deep in serious talk at Ambassador Lodge and McNamara, Ambassador Goldberg, and Governor Harriman, and the Vice President. He brought them over from the office. McNamara soon left. Margie is waiting for me, he said. The rest of us sat down for dinner at 7:45. Lyndon had not come to the children's party this year. The first time, I believe. A barometer of how serious is the mood, how tough the days. These men have staying qualities. Else they wouldn't be around now. I admire them so much. It's very difficult to remember that once Lodge was pitted against us in a nationwide race, it seems almost fictional. It was a little after 9 when they finished dinner, and Lyndon and Linda and I left in the helicopter for Andrews and departed Washington in Air Force One. This time we were going back to Bergstrom, the first time in a long time that the press would not be in San Antonio. It was a swift and pleasant and fairly light-hearted journey, in spite of the rising tide of bad stories, which you can feel in your bones. It was a little past 11 when we reached Bergstrom. At 11:30 we were at the ranch, and I could really feel that our personal Christmas had begun.